This week marks the unofficial kickoff of the NBA offseason, and as expected, we got news today. Kyrie Irving, Rudy Gobert, how does that stuff affect the Suns, and what is the latest on DeAndre Ayton, the big story in Sunsland? We'll break all of it down on today's episode of Locked On Suns with special guest Matt Moore.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
We are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past five seasons and a writer at Suns.com and Dime Magazine. A big thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen today and every day. Stuff coming fast and furious, so you know the best place to find all of it is right here. If you're finding us on your favorite podcast platform, go ahead and hit follow or subscribe. Make sure you don't miss us in your feed every day. And if you're finding us on YouTube, that is the best way to support the show. Hit subscribe right down below and drop me a comment on... I want to hear from you guys because this is something I've kind of cooked up. I'm not sure if it's actually legit. Matt will tell us his idea on it in just a second. But is this Rudy Gobert sweepstakes actually affect the Suns at all? Because it feels like it does. It feels like it'll be the first domino. I want to hear from Suns fans directly if you think it actually matters at all. But as I just introduced, Matt Moore is here. He is a writer at the Action Network. He is the co-host of Locked On Nuggets here on the network, Locked On NBA on the network. Matt, welcome. I'm sure things are crazy for you, so I appreciate the time. Are you... Am I taking you from Stanley Cup Final Game 3 here? I feel bad if I'm jeopardizing your watch time.
Oh, it's okay. It just means less time for me to watch my wife go completely insane. She turns into a berserk crazy woman whenever the Avalanche are on. So if you hear any like loud obscenities being screamed in the background, that's my wife.
I have no idea what it's like to care about a hockey team or have a good one in the place that I live. So I cannot relate whatsoever, but I do think it's cool when smaller places, smaller markets, smaller towns get a taste of the final. So it's kind of cool. I know Tampa Bay is far from like this little engine that could at this point, but the final matchup did perk my interest. I'm like, hey, that's cool. Some smaller places. But let's dive into the NBA because that's what we're here to do. The news today was a couple of things. I think the Kyrie Irving is what people will have really glommed onto. So let's start there. He reportedly may opt out. That is not a huge surprise. He allegedly has interest around the NBA. I am less convinced of that part in terms of good teams wanting to take that on in a long-term way. Do you buy that there are teams out there who want Kyrie and or would actually want to give him a new, longer contract?
Yes, I do. There's been burblings around the league for a while about a possible Kyrie and LeBron reunion. They were both open to it. Kyrie did a long-standing interview that kind of revealed that he was thinking, like, you know, I really didn't appreciate my time with LeBron. I handled that badly. LeBron, and you're looking around and you're like, I need help. Who can I turn to? Kyrie, I think, is an option. Don't know what the trade is going to look like. The assumption from a lot of people is like, oh, it's going to involve Russell Westbrook, but I'm not sure that's the case. Or if it does, it's definitely going to involve a third team. But look, I just tend to think that when a star player wants to go somewhere else, he typically gets it. And when a star player wants to go to the Lakers, he typically gets it. And I think that the Nets understand that they are kind of in control of the situation where if they give him everything that he wants, they can have him back. But the Nets, I don't think, want that. I think this year has been very educational for them on the Kyrie Irving experience, and they're moving in a different direction. The other two teams, the Knicks and the Clippers, I'd heard the Knicks mentioned a month ago and kind of thought it was crazy. I was like, really? Like, really? So I'm not surprised to see their name pop up on the list. If you look at, like, what are the options? Yeah, they've got Julius Randle, who they can move. If you're looking to move a disgruntled kind of distressed asset in Kyrie Irving, you have to get one kind of back. And Julius Randle's a front court player that at least provides you production. It's not a perfect fit. The defense is a question mark, but it's not like you're getting great defense with Kyrie Irving anyway, so there's options there. And then the Clippers, the only reason I think that one might have legs is Kawhi Leonard has been known to be after a point guard for years. He's been telling their Clippers management, we need a point guard, we need a point guard, we need a point guard. That's not necessarily say that they don't trust Reggie Jackson, but they want an additional third star point guard next to Reggie Jackson and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. So I'm not surprised that the report came out. It didn't catch me off guard. I think in large part, the biggest takeaway is just that I think the Nets have kind of just realized, like, this guy is just not worth the trouble. And that's, even though they think that because he's so talented, there will always be another team that thinks, might just work for us.
And a more desperate team, I guess. But that's where I wanted to hit is the idea that the Nets wouldn't be desperate and what's going on their end, because we already know they have Ben Simmons, who is still, I think, fair to say, a pretty big question mark. I think he probably will play to start next season, but what he looks like is an open question. How does he fit with that group, etc.? I think that will all be obviously something to pick up on whether they keep Kyrie or not. But then there was this other report that I'm not sure how I'm not sure how many people outside of Phoenix are even paying any attention to it, but Suns fans are obviously going a little bit crazy with the idea that Kevin Durant could be available, and I wonder how seriously you took that stuff, because there was the report a couple weeks ago that he hadn't spoken with the Nets front office. He's on this very, very long contract, I believe 4 more seasons after this one that just ended, so is that going to be a domino that falls? It doesn't feel like that's being talked about at all, but not talking to your franchise is a pretty big deal.
So I think this will be interesting to watch from a number of perspectives, because it doesn't necessarily, it does seem like the Nets are very much in a, we have to regain control of the franchise, because they basically let Kyrie and KD run things, right? Like, they signed DeAndre Jordan to a big contract.
Fired their coach.
The coach, who was literally just described as like, it's more of a consultant role. Like, all of this was very much like the truest like stretch of the player empowerment era. And now there does seem to be a pushback from, I think ownership expressed it to management, and management is carrying through on that incentive to kind of like, okay, let's run things like a normal basketball team for a while and see how that goes. Let's see how that works out. So to that end, the question is, would they be, if you're the Nets, are you really so set on that you would risk stressing your relationship with Kevin Durant, or is Kevin Durant okay with these conversations? And nobody really knows. Yeah. Like, nobody has a good sense. There's been no reporting, and I heard nothing on the idea of whether or not like Kevin Durant is like mad at the Nets because of how they're handling the Kyrie thing, or unhappy with the Nets, or happy with the Nets. There's no real way to tell. I think that's the kind of key question here. If KD did not want Kyrie, then KD's probably going to be gone. Like, KD will be like, I'm out. And there's been speculation that he could do that. But none of the people that are traditionally reporting stuff from KD have indicated that. So I tend to be like, look, is it possible that he could ask out? Yes. Do I think that that's the case where it is now? No, I don't think that we're there yet. I think that comes later in the summer, if it happens at all.
It's been weird to me in general, and this is a bigger point, how little we've heard about the biggest pieces right now. You know, we're 10 days away from free agency officially starting and 3 days away from the draft. And it just feels like by this point we have started to have an idea of like, okay, watch this situation. This guy could become available. This team is particularly going to be aggressive. Things surprise us, obviously, but am I reading that right? It just feels like there's less out there, period, right now, and that makes it really hard to know what's going to happen. Maybe it means just less will happen. I don't know.
No, I would say that there's quite a bit out there. I just think that because of the timing, this is a lot of it. You have to keep in mind that the NBA Finals was Thursday, and the league, we had some stuff that was kind of circulating around. Like, I did an intel piece, and everybody's on intel pieces, what we do. But in general, a lot of the general managers tend to be in pure draft prep and kind of away from their phones for much of the early part of June. And part of that's because, like, they don't want to detract from the finals. Like, the league has always kind of been like, hey, can you keep it on the down low? Because we kind of want to actually focus on the championship.
And when the biggest reporter works for the place that broadcasts the championship, then you can see the trickle down. Yes.
Yeah, right. Sure. So there's a little bit of that. I think the timing is the large part of this. I just think that a lot of GMs, we've had like months of lead up in previous years because of COVID. Now it's like, oh, hey, you got a week. Like, the season ended this day. Now for most teams, it's been a couple of weeks, right? But even then, I think it's kind of snuck up on them quickly. But I'm expecting a lot of noise between now and Thursday night. I actually expect Thursday night to be pretty active in terms of trade talks. I can't say if it's going to be active in terms of trades because it takes two to tango, and sometimes expectations get out of whack. But look, I actually think free agency is going to be pretty active overall.
Well, that's very exciting to hear. You mentioned you had an Intel piece. A big part of that was DeAndre Ayton. You have another one coming out this week. People may have already read it by the time that they listen to this show. So we'll dive into everything Ayton related, starting with Rudy Gobert. I want to hit on that before we dive too deep on Ayton. We'll do all that in a second. First, though, today's show, guys, brought to you by Prize Picks. We love Prize Picks here on the Locked On Podcast Network, and we know you will too because you are a bunch of NBA junkies just like us. And if you've played Daily Fantasy before, odds are you know that it can be broken. If you're not an expert, if you don't love the method, if you don't love how the game works, it can be really frustrating. But Prize Picks changes that. It's easy to use, first of all. You just pick 2 to 5 players and an over or an under on their projections, and you can go up to 10 times on any entry. It's just you versus those projections, so no pool, no head-to-head opponent, no league, no any of that. It is just you versus those projections. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. They also, of course, Prize Picks offers safe and fast withdrawals. Here's how it works. So, let's say you are a WNBA fan. Let's say you're just moving your basketball attention over there. I would say, you know, pick any scorer, hit the over on points. That tends to be a good thing in the WNBA because they actually give people breaks. They actually have space between games. As long as they're healthy, you can expect that the scoring will continue, even in a relatively low-scoring league. Let's say you are a Diamondbacks fan here locally and you want to ride the Buddy Kennedy engine. Let's say you go over on hits. Yes, you can mix sports. That's all you got to do. Pick an over or an under on each projection. Set your lineup, 2 to 5 players, and let it ride. For a limited time, Prize Picks also has an exclusive no-brainer offer for all Locked On listeners. You will get $50 free if, and of course when, a player in your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point if you use the code NBA. That's right, an exclusive offer available only to Locked On listeners who sign up today using the code NBA to get $50 free if and when a player in your first Prize Picks entry scores a single point. Prize Picks, daily fantasy made easy. Alrighty, we are going to talk about DeAndre Ayton. Matt, I want to ask you quickly about Rudy Gobert. You had the Chicago stuff in your piece a couple weeks ago, and it seems like it's only really picked up since then in a couple of different places. I want to just ask you, one, why the Bulls are going to try to get another center if they do that. I understand Vucevic hasn't been awesome for them, but that seems like a pretty major shift. And then secondly, again, as I told our listeners to drop in the comments, does the market for Gobert, the chase for Gobert, how intertwined is that with the Ayton pursuit?
It's an interesting question. So let's talk about the first one first. I think, you know, Arturis Karnsovas is really trying to push, you know, how do you get the championship contention immediately and then just keep working around the problem, right? So, you know, what was the starting point? They didn't have really much top-end talents. They get DeMar DeRozan, they get Nikola Vucevic, and they have a really good season. They finish with a top-5 seed and, you know, really kind of took a big step forward. And now the question is, like, all right, how do you go from here? What was your big problem? Well, your defense fell off, okay? So how do you address that? Well, Gobert's out there. And I asked around of some people that are familiar with Karnisovas. Now, Karnisovas, he's working in Denver. We never really got to interact with him much. I mean, by most of media, because he's a very, just like, keeps it close to the best guy. But I asked some people that do know him if Gobert is his type of player. And they're like, yeah, he's always been really high on him. He really values defense and basketball IQ. And Gobert has a lot of both of those things in terms of, defensive length and athleticism and basketball IQ defensively. So obviously Gobert is like number one on that list for the regular season. So it makes some sense. I think that they're willing. Vucevic didn't give them enough. And so if you're getting an asset that the Jazz are willing to give, even if they're going to ask a pretty incredible price, I think that they're in that conversation. Chicago has been super aggressive, and this is what they're kind of centered on. I will say, I kind of said today on Locked On Nuggets, and I got aggregated that the expectation around the league is that he ends up with Chicago. That's not for sure. I will say that, like, that's what people kind of think is, like, yeah, it sounds like this is probably going to be Chicago. What is interesting, and this pertains to the Suns, is I have heard a number of conversations, not more than one, that have been teams that were interested in Gobert trying to find a third team to interact with, and Ayton being a possibility. So Ayton potentially being involved in a 3-way deal.
So a very directly related market. Yeah.
Look, I'm just going to be straight with you. Ayton is, there was a little bit of noise a while back about, hey, the, you know, the Suns might just keep him, like, but, and everyone was kind of like, we think it's posturing, and it certainly seems like it, because there continues to just be like expectation about Ayton in drafts and trade circles. Like, that's just, he's a name that keeps popping up. And so, yeah, I think that there's a possibility. I think if you're one of the teams that's interested in Gobert, you're probably also checking in with Phoenix as a facilitator to see if you have something Phoenix wants, and then Utah can get Ayton, and then they get Gobert. And there's a number of teams, I think, that have at least explored that possibility as we get closer to free agency. The fact that it hasn't happened, you know, that it hasn't been agreed to, is not shocking given Ayton's free agency situation. But also, I think this deal is going to be difficult to pull off. And the reason I say that is Danny Ainge just always wants to win the trade huge. He wants to win every trade by like a billion points. And that's going to be difficult with most of the teams that are involved, because I would describe most of the teams involved as pretty savvy GMs. So I think a one-to-one trade is obviously easier to navigate, but I do think it's a possibility that we see three-way options explored with Ayton and Gobert.
Well, the three-way with Ayton specifically is pretty likely. So it's not, Suns fans won't be surprised to hear that a three-team situation might be there. I hadn't necessarily heard that Gobert might be a component of that, but it's not crazy. If a center is changing hands and one team needs one and is losing one, I mean, I don't know what all that would entail, but I guess it's not surprising. The other player who came up today, and I don't know if you have heard anything to the same extent, it feels inevitable that John Collins is moving. And then we heard today that there was this tidbit of James Jones having been a longtime fan of Collins. I think that was from Mark Stein. I haven't been able to really wrap my head around it. I didn't expect that Collins would be a player who would be on the I've talked about the Hawks a lot, but I kind of just talked around Collins. It just didn't feel like a great fit because he's not really a center. I definitely don't think he's the type of center Monty Williams would want to play based on what he's always done here. And the Suns have a lot of forwards, including one that might be extended this summer and one that they just extended last summer. So where do you see the Hawks factoring into all of this, and Collins in particular?
The board for Collins is crazy. So I heard that the Blazers essentially said that the 7 for Collins was not enough from Atlanta's end, which is strong. There's a lot of teams that are back that are in on Collins. They've been chasing him for years. This goes back 2 full seasons to the 2021 trade deadline, was when they were actively trying to get Collins. And a number of those teams are back in on those discussions. Phoenix is not one that I've heard specifically attached to him, but I will say there's been a couple of three-way conversations with teams that I know also have interest in Collins that would make a lot of sense. I think the Sacramento Kings and the number 4 pick is one that you can kind of look at and go, there's probably some sort of mechanism, especially if you factor in the fact that the Hawks are looking to move Clint Capella, right? They're looking to trade Clint Capella, which means they'll have room for a center. Now they like the kid they have there coming up, but I think that's an interesting possibility of there being enough movement. It continues with this trend of, again, the Suns, I think, are probably going to put out, I would not be surprised if there was a media report in the next 7 days that says that the Suns are ready to re-sign DeAndre Ayton because they need to keep leverage. But around the league, there continues to be there doesn't seem to be a way for him to return. So I think there's a number of options that can go there. Now, I like the Collins fit a lot because you put Chris Paul next to John Collins, and sure, it's not as good as maybe, I'm trying to think of like what the most dominant combination would be. Yeah, it's not Blake Griffin, but it's Collins can space to 3. He's super athletic. He's a 3-level scorer. I'm extremely high on John Collins. I think most teams can use John Collins. And so
I think
if you look
at, he's a really
good
player. Maybe I shouldn't be overcomplicating it so much, right? It's like, he's a really good player. He plays well in the pick and roll. That's what the Suns want to do. I just think he doesn't solve your center problem, and you have to find a particular type of big man to pair him with, and then the Suns would be giving theirs up.
Well, I think that's maybe part of the equation is if you're letting Ayton go and you're having this whole thing with Ayton, if you put a premium on center, you would just keep Ayton. So it seems like the idea is we need to be able to go to a small ball 5, which I really thought that they missed in these playoffs was the option to go to Dario Saric as a small ball five. Those units just like shredded. It was like, even if you only played it like for 5 minutes, like you would play the Saric small ball five unit, and it was such a different look. Teams were so unprepared for it, and they really missed that because they doubled and tripled down with JaVale and Biz. So if you look at it from the perspective of, look, if we want to go small, we can play Collins at five for 10 minutes a game, and we'll have so much offense. And then center, they literally proved, like, we can have JaVale and Biz or that level of replacement center and be able to get by. And if you're more versatile and not as optimized, I think that's honestly better for their playoff hopes.
Yeah, I want to ask you a couple things off of that. One is, and then I want to ask you a bigger picture question about the Suns in the next segment. But to close this one out, you seem a little bit more optimistic than I think a lot of even Suns fans are that this team can. I know you're saying the theory of it, but I guess I'll just ask it to you. How likely do you think it is that the Suns can actually get a similar level of championship equity, so to speak, if they trade DeAndre Ayton? Like, do you see deals out there for them or players that they could target where the things might look pretty different? Maybe Cam Johnson plays a bigger role than he has. Maybe this guy they get back is obviously involved. They get a center. Maybe it's JaVale. Maybe it's Biombo. Maybe it's somebody else. Dario, maybe he plays more. Maybe that's part of the solution. Do you see them getting to, you know, one of the two or three teams in the West that has a puncher's chance come next season, even if they trade Ayton? Because a lot of Suns fans feel like if Ayton leaves, kind of no matter who they get, they're not getting back to where they were.
Yeah, I think that there's still going to be a force. I think they actually might be better suited. So I think the question here is, will they be as good of a team as they were this season in terms of record and point differential? Or will they be as good of a team as they were last season in terms of their championship threat? And to me, it's closer to you can take a step back in the regular season and take a step forward in the postseason. Mm-hmm. They're not the same sport. Mm-hmm. The postseason and the regular season at this point are no longer the same sport. Because, as an example, if the Chicago Bulls trade for Rudy Gobert, I will hammer their over on wins for the regular season, and I will never put a dime on them to win a playoff game. Like, that will not be a thing that I do. With the Suns, I do think a lot of it was they were so – I talked about this throughout the season. Now, look, may have been wrong because it may have just been COVID. Everyone here knows the deal with that. Might just been COVID. But if there was a knock on them, my knock on them was I just don't know how versatile they are. If you get slightly worse but more versatile, that's better for the playoffs, because no matter how good your best punch is, if you're in the wrong matchup, that punch is never going to land. So it's better to have versatility across the board, I think. And some of the trade options I've heard, I think, definitely fit into that category. And even if none of these trade possibilities work out, which that's very likely, because if we hear about them, there's always a good chance that they're not going to happen. It does indicate a very strong market. Like, the market for Ayton is hot. It is a good, hot market. They can find quality replacements to augment the team, depending on how much ownership, whoever that is, wants to spend. Then that all comes together, and I think you have a better chance at winning the title than this season, because you're not trying to be like, this is who we are, and we're going to beat you this way, but instead have more answers to the defensive problems in front of you.
I think those are all fantastic points. I do think the Dario Saric thing was underrated in last year's finals, in this year's regular season. The bench not performing well overall, I think, had a lot to do with Dario. So I don't think it's smart to necessarily count on him, because he's coming off of now two major knee injuries. But a piece like that, who maybe is in the front court, gives you a little bit more versatility on top of maybe the type of player you get back in a trade. I don't disagree with you. I guess I'm just maybe overly skeptical that type of trade, like you were just saying, actually materializes. But let's get to that other bigger picture Suns question that I had for you, Matt, and then just about this time of year and the Suns and how they are to read, because it feels like they're difficult to read, and I want to get your perspective on that. And then we'll go rapid fire on a couple of the other big Suns topics heading into this offseason. First, today's show, guys, also brought to you by Rock Auto. With so many makes and models out there these days, it is impossible for your local chain auto parts store, or even your dealership, frankly, to have everything that you need. You'd think a dealership would have everything, but they have absolutely nothing. You have to order it almost without a doubt, and they charge you 3-4 times what you should pay. A dealer or an auto parts store, they're going to do their best, but they're going to be scrolling. They're going to have no idea what you want. They're going to have, again, a pretty significant uptick on the price, and you're going to have to wait for them to get it in stock if they don't have it. So go to Rock Auto. They've been serving do-it-yourselfers online for over 20 years. I always think that's pretty remarkable. Not a lot of places doing anything online for 20 years, let alone this particular thing. And they save you 30, 50, even 100% on the same part. So let's see. Honda Odyssey fuel pump, $353 from a chain store. Rock Auto has it for $216. Maybe you're not a minivanner, but I've checked it myself. Told you guys I've ordered a rear view mirror, which is not something you order every day. They had that even for my car. And I my backing out of the garage incident was solved in an instant, thanks to Rock Auto. So go explore that easy-to-use website today and find the solution to all of your auto parts needs. And when you make your purchase at rockauto.com, write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. All right, Matt, so I'm sure you know where I'm going here on the Suns, the leakage that's happening. How difficult is it to get a read on the Suns side of things? I know last offseason they didn't really do a whole ton, so maybe it didn't matter, but the Chris Paul trade kind of came out of nowhere until the few days right before it happened. We just have not heard a lot since James Jones took over. Is that the same for you in sort of the rumor mill, the hot stove this time of year?
Yeah, so like I'm not here to be like, here's what James Jones is thinking, what the Suns are gonna do, not what I do. And so I think it's a good thing, right? I think the best organizations are the ones that you have a hard time reading. There's a lot of organizations that are very, very, very leaky, and the Suns are not one of them. I do think that it's impossible for most things not to get out, just because there's always eventually, like, if you talk to another team, there's usually somebody in that other team that's willing to have conversations. Like, if the Suns and Oklahoma City Thunder did a deal, no one would ever hear anything. You wouldn't even know it was done. They would just show up on the team the next day. That's the only way you would know. There would be a press release. The NBA wouldn't announce it. It would just be like, oh, now this guy's on this team. I think that when you're navigating a lot of this, you always have to ask the question. This goes with the same. This goes with the stuff that I report as well. Okay, what's the motivation? Why was this person told this? What was the where did this information come from? And you should always treat it with a level of skepticism, because it's often, most often, almost always, 99% of the time, it's motivated, right? There's talks about what the Suns have offered the Kings, right, in various deals. That's all generated, I feel, pretty strongly from a Kings perspective and not from a Suns perspective. And so the Suns are the ones that most likely were like, no, don't want any part of that. But everyone will always say the other team was the one that offered it. So you look at all these options and you try and decipher it. The best thing you can do is just try and, I think, always keep a skeptical eye towards what the motivations are for the various leak coming out, and does it make sense? Who are the reporters involved, and what have they reported on in the past, and has it been accurate or not? And not only that, but has it consistently shown one side? Like, is a reporter traditionally like pretty complimentary towards one GM or one agent's clients? And those kind of things are hard to decipher. If you're the average fan, you know, I think to keep in mind is that most of the stuff, there's this idea of like, it's just made up. That in my experience is not how it goes. That there's oftentimes, it's, if somebody says like, that wasn't true at all, it's because it was a different version of the deal that was offered, right? Instead of this, it was this. I reported on the Sixers and Ben Simmons talks with the Kings at one point. And it was like, oh, it was this and this. And then I got word later that it was like, no, that was not it. It was this and this and this other thing, and also these picks and also this other thing. And you're like, oh, that's a lot more. And it wasn't that the original report was wrong. It was that it wasn't complete. The other thing I will say, and this is like the biggest thing at stress, all the information that comes out is almost always outdated. It's like, yeah, I will call someone and be like, did you guys talk about this deal? And they're like, yeah, 6 weeks ago. And then we stopped talking about it 5.5 weeks ago. Yeah. And that's just the weird kind of nature of it. And so you have to kind of keep in mind all those things, I think, when you're analyzing how much to freak out about any one particular piece of news.
Okay, we'll go rapid fire on some things to close the show, but I wanted to ask you one last question on Ayton, and that is, you said the market was hot for him. Sounds like that's the case in terms of sign-in trades. I just want to confirm, because this is a piece that I guess it's almost just expected, but there is fully a market for a full four-year max for Ayton. Like, that's the assumption all these teams were hearing would be fully on board to give him a max, correct? And then if there's anything else we didn't get to with Ayton, feel free to throw that in.
I don't know. So that's what I'll tell you. Is like,
that's the part that I just feel like is not getting put out there. Is like,
it's not okay, getting reported.
You have to sign this guy to a massive contract on top of all of this. That has to be pretty significant interest to want to do that.
Yep.
Yeah.
I do not have numbers on what Ayton is looking at. I think there's a presumption of a max from anybody, because I think that that's the idea of like, if they're not offering a max, then if you're offering anything substantially less than a max, I think the idea is that Phoenix would still wind up feeling like the best value was just to go ahead and retain him, right? Yeah. You have to get above whatever their pain threshold is on the number. And that, I think, is an interesting piece of information that we just don't have yet.
It's been the thing I've started to stress more and more. I did a Predict the Headline show today, and I was like, you know, rival executives wonder where Ayton's max actually is. Like, I don't think that there's not interest, because obviously these teams being thrown around, there has to be some level of expectation, like you're saying, that there's money out there for him and a market. We know teams have space. We know teams have the ability to create it, whatever. But it's just been a very strange portion of all of this that you just haven't heard the, you know, Detroit enamored with Ayton and the way he fits with Cade, or like just something like that.
Right.
It's very bizarre. Right. But let's go. We can take the reporter hat off a little bit, and I just kind of want to hear your thoughts on some things. So, Booker Supermax, not getting talked about a lot because it's not super important. It's just, will they or won't they? And we all kind of know what the contract would be if it was given. Would you do that? Would you give Booker the Supermax? I've kind of leaned on yes because he's so young, but what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've already proven that you can win with him. You've made the finals. Like, if you got a guy who can do what he's done and show the growth that he has and be considered an MVP candidate, as he seriously was considered this season, even though his numbers may not have stacked up, like the wins were there, you can win with him. He gets better. He's still this age. I don't think it's a question. Like, to me, like, the idea that he wouldn't be worth it, you know, what player are you really going to get that's going to be, you know, better than that? Like, there's no better use of your resources over the next 5 years than paying Devin Booker to be the face of your franchise. If it was more one-dimensional, okay, but he's proven he can defend. He's proven he's a great passer. He's proven that he can be part of a winning culture. I think absolutely he's a max guy.
Yeah, and he'll be 30-31 even after it would be 6 years when this thing would wrap up if they didn't extend him again after that. So it's not like some of these where you're talking about a guy who's going to be in his mid-30s. So I definitely lean toward the same. Cam Johnson is also eligible for an extension. I've, you know, the obvious comparison is not something I pulled out uniquely, but Joe Harris was $475 million, but it was partially guaranteed. Duncan Robinson was $590 million. Is that where you see a guy like Cam Johnson? Is that where you think he would land? What do you think? I mean, not what he is rumored to be getting or any of that, just your analysis on it.
I mean, me personally, if we're talking about like how I value him, like, I think he's more valuable than Duncan Robinson. He's way more valuable than Joe Harris. Like, I think he's a guy that it's like, oh, hey, he provides reliable shooting and scoring, and he's a plus defender. So for that perspective, I don't know. I think it's going to be a pretty hefty price tag. I think that that's one that they're going to have to want to really truncate the market on, which they can do effectively in order to limit his ability to get a competing offer.
Yeah, I just think the way that shooting tends to get, I don't even want to say overvalued in free agency, but
it does.
In some cases, like Davis Bertans, even Duncan Robinson, like when guys hit the market, it tends to get a little crazy. I do think there's the awkward thing of, I don't know how awkward it is, Mikal Bridges probably could care less in his own way, but like you're not going to go over that number, I don't think. So
right. You're
at 484 with Mikal, or 490, right? So it's going to be somewhere between Harris and what Mikal got, and I think that's probably where it lands. Last one for you, Matt. The Suns currently are plus 1,000 to win the 2023 title. I know these things are sort of silly, but with all the questions in front of them and everything else, where do you land on that? Too high, too low, just right?
So they were the number one team on my, because I did an early look at, if you're going to bet the futures right now, if you want to hold your money for an entire year, who are you going to bet right now? And I bet three teams, and the Suns were not one of them, but they were my first honorable mention. And the only reason I held off is I just wanted to see what they're going to do with the Ayton situation. I think once you resolve that and you look at the roster, then the number is going to drop a lot. But look, I think if you're able to get to a point, I think this always goes in circles where you're like, look, there's a good chance they come out of this with a more versatile roster that's better built for a playoff run and can counter more things. Are you going to get another healthy year, Chris? Like, are you really going to get through another year where Chris doesn't suffer an injury? And then you got to ask about like all the miles and minutes on everybody. And then how do you manage Cam Johnson? And then what happens with Ayton is the biggest question. But I don't think if somebody bets the Suns right now, I wouldn't be like, that's a terrible bet. I would say that's a pretty good value bet. You know, they're undervalued by the market right now. The market number does not reflect what I think their chances of winning a title are. I just don't think that now is when I want to bet them. I'm prepared to bet them later because I still think there'll be a lingering, like, they collapse so hard in the playoffs. Can we really trust this team? And I'll probably use that to my advantage and bet them after I see what they do with the Ayton situation.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, right after Ayton leaves, if that happens, or even heading into next season when their sort of overall roster talent might not feel like it stacks up, coupled with the fact that they're coming off of the loss, you could see it maybe even getting a little nicer than plus 1,000 for them. But they're sixth right now behind at Bet Online, behind Brooklyn, Milwaukee, the Clippers, the Celtics, and the Warriors. Locked On Mavs hosts very duly noted that they were ahead of the Mavs, which actually does sort of surprise me, just playing the recency bias a little bit. But lots to talk about the odds of winning a championship next season. We will not spend too much time here in June of 2022. But you can check his work out at the Action Network, at Locked On Nuggets, all over the internet. Of course, you probably already follow him at HP Basketball on Twitter. And that'll do it for today, guys. Keep it right here all week long. Bonus episodes if crazy stuff happens. I'm bringing my recording equipment on the road because I have to travel for work. So it's going to be a crazy week for all of us, but keep it here. Thanks for making Locked On Suns your first listen. Now, keep it rolling with the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft, which will be part one was on this feed on Friday. The rest of the parts will be on its own feed over on the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft feed. Just search that in your favorite podcast platform and you will find it. Every pick broken down by local experts, national analysts, all of it. Very cool thing we put together every year. Really fun listen. So go listen over there, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.